Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular Wednesday stream.
Well, I suppose it's a Wednesday stream to some degree, but also somewhat irregular, because with us this evening on essentially asylum to the nearest based land is one Harry from the Lotus Ears.
Hello, Harry.
Hello.
Hello, thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here. I've really been enjoying your streams recently. They've been very eye-opening. So I'm really pleased to be here. Thank you for choosing me to discuss this with.
Thank you for coming on. For those of you who don't know, just want to give people a quick introduction in case people have been living under a rock and do not know who you are.
Oh, what, you want me to give an introduction?
Just a quick one.
Yeah. I'm Harry from Lotus Eaters. You may be aware of the Lotus Eaters. They are one Carl Benjamin or Sargon of Akkad's Media Institute organization, whatever you want to call us. We do daily podcasts where we release videos on YouTube, and we do written articles, and I do premium work as well, premium videos on the website. So you can go check out the website if you want to look at the premium stuff. I'll just throw the shill out right now. It's £5 a month for the cheapest one. That gives you access to everything, so feel free to go and check that out. Other than that, I'm just a guy, really. I don't know what else to say about myself. It's weird shilling myself.
Oh no, it's fine. We try and let people give themselves an intro. I've got your kind of stuff on screen, and we've also got links in the description down below and to your Twitter and to your page on the Lotus Eaters. Is there anything else you have to shill before we proceed?
One video I'm particularly proud of is the one that I did on MLK and why, you know, people on the right and conservatives shouldn't lionize the man. He was a disgusting communist. he hated everything we stand for. He was also just a disgusting sexual degenerate. I've recently done some live streams on Rumble for the website with Connor, where I spoke about, we were discussing James Lindsay and the problems with him. And other than that, currently I'm working on something that's going to be a very long-term project, because it's just so stop and start with trying to get everything sorted and doing all the research. But I'm doing something on the history of the Ligabiter, the gay rights movement, and why it was not once respectable. It was never there to just, so because people just wanted to be married and be normal. And it actually was somewhat inspired a little bit by the article that you guys have on your Anti-Politics Substack about Harry Hayes.
Oh,
that really
got
Harry Hayes. In looking into, because he's not the only one. In fact, he is probably in the majority of those activists.
I was going to write a series of those, but then it all started getting a bit...
Yeah, I mean, I think basically the White March is maybe the last time we might really ever touch that subject to any degree, because it is just so grim. I kind of noticed you missed one vital fact talking about MLK, though. He is black at the end of the day. This is almost... an important thing.
Breaking news, guys. MLK is
actually black.
I'll do our own
show. Sorry.
If you guys would like to donate to the stream, you've been utilizing it quite well, so thank you for that. We've got our Ko-fi link, which does take all forms of payment.
It does indeed.
And doesn't take much of a cut at all. So that's the best way to bypass the YouTubes. If you want to donate via the YouTubes, we have Super Chats and memberships as well, if you want to support us on a regular basis.
And then there is also the Substack, if you want to support the stuff
we do.
Yes, I see
John Morton and Anthony Keane. Thank you, our returning members. And yes, there is also the Substack, which this kind of discussion springs from. If you want to support us via the Substack, that is also a good way. There isn't much of a cut. That's where our written content is on the Anti-Politics Substack, and where kind of your proposition for the idea of a Carlisle Institute is in written form.
Yes.
That's kind of where this springboards from.
Yeah, I suppose we're going to have a shorter stream this evening, so I suppose I'll kind of get cracking here with the main idea. And it's something I've kind of described before, but we thought, you know, why not kind of talk about it in full when I sort of communicated with Harry a little bit over Twitter as well, and he seemed quite keen in the idea, so I thought, why not? We'll have him on. It was really driven home to me when I went to the Mises Institute last year. It is a physical building. There are people who have been working in it, some of them, you know, like Lou Rockwell, between that and the previous office for nearly 40 years now, if not just slightly over. And really, at the end of the day, if we are to sort of lay down any sort of realistic prospects, I believe, for where we are, it is to make sure that people are still doing the same thing in 40 years' time. Because the way I look at it is that, say, for example, the alt-right, where are they now? The skeptics, where are they now? Most of them are gone.
Or we're you're looking there now.
Yeah. But most of them are gone, or we're basically eaten up in the whole sort of Trump wave thing.
There has been, yeah, as I sold it to people, this is going to be a white pill heavy stream.
Yes.
Big old pile of them.
Yes, well, exactly. Chancellor Chieftain saying in the chat there, and as I mentioned in my first speech for Nomos, it is about consuming time, not space. We must sort of be permanent and present in such a way that history does not just wash over us. And that is really the most vital aspect of all of it, quite frankly. And I think that that could be manifested in some sort of realistic span of time amongst ourselves in the UK, working with the people who do the shielding stuff, some of the other friends we have, and possibly really just finding the right amount of people through which we can get some kind of patronage to make it work. I mean, you might spell it with C.
I can never get them up when I need to.
Yes.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, no, just that I believe this to be essentially about the only realistic goal we could orientate ourselves towards and something we can consider actually achieving within our lifetimes that will actually be useful. It's not starting another third party. It's not starting something that's going to be like a think tank that gets absorbed into the Tory octopus, as we have come to describe it.
Yes.
It is ours. It is on our own. We get to control it. We get to use it to preserve cultural and written works. We can vet and essentially, you know, sort our own people. It can be an output and essentially what you would normally describe as something akin to a vertical. However, I also think at the same time that it could be maybe one of the last spaces in the UK that never had Wi-Fi in it. Which I think is important on some level.
Possibly.
Honestly, just having a space where people aren't just going to be doom scrolling all day.
Yes,
you are probably right in just no internet.
Well, I was going to ask you, since you've kind of come here from, I guess, in your capacity, Lotus Eaters is how people know you primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, as a project, it's good on paper to have physical stuff, but it really is also about what you do with it. And the idea of having an institute rather than it being a kind of a media vertical or something like that, it means it could possibly, if it's done and set up in the right way, be a non-profit, which is a great way to make sure you're not just spinning your wheels and churning through through all your capital. And also, it's a good way of having a degree of respectability.
Yes.
It looks better if you are coming from somewhere that sounds like it is official. There's a lot of fake it till you make it style stuff, both on the left and kind of the quote-unquote centre-right and the establishment, that is a great way of lending people credibility. And I think if we are able to gather people together, that people, you know, other people like, that we like, basically have a space for our people and have it be concentrating that credibility, concentrating that goodwill, and be able to springboard stuff and springboard people. It's really all the stuff you can do with your own kind of institute vertical. Or
yes.
It also would be nice just to have an umbrella to put things under.
I do see Space Raptor in the chat there is asking the important question, will there be tendies? If there is a kitchen, there will be tendies.
There will be tendies.
I will make them. And they will be good.
I'll approve of the tendies.
This is a...
Does he want his name attached to this, or is he spinning right now at the mere mention?
Tendies, I mean, will be good.
One of the things as well, as I've sort of brought this idea to other people, is that it doesn't have to just be about Thomas Carlyle. It doesn't just have to be about traditionalist literature. I think that's a large part of it. And I think
it's similar to how Mises Institute isn't purely based around, oh, here's everything that Mises taught and that's where it starts and ends.
Yes. But you can also think of the fact that, you know, Carlyle himself also venerated art. He was into verse. And,
yes.
You know, the physical works, like sculptures. You could even consider that there might even be space for things like music. You know, these are all vital aspects of Western European and more specifically British culture. These are all things that we, you know, if we want to stand by any form of principle around tradition, then it must be permanent. We must keep it alive. And most importantly, we must pass it on to someone else so that the heritage of it can actually be recognised.
Certainly, there are lots and lots of musicians, myself included, within our spheres. So it's a waste that a lot of us have talents that aren't able to be put out there in the way that we would like, if only because I think people know from my own personal experiences last year, I, because of the beliefs that I hold and the position that I hold, got kicked out. And it's just a fact of the matter that institutions don't want people like us. They don't want people like us being able to produce our own art. So having a space for that is excellent. And I think one of the reasons that I'm so interested in this idea, if you don't mind me saying, is, you know, I work for Lotus Eaters. I love Lotus Eaters. I love what we do. But I don't think we can do everything that we want on our own. We need to have alliances. We need to have networks within the UK, like you say, outside of the conservative octopus. And I think that's something that would be beneficial for everybody, so that we're not as weak if we're just one place that can be destroyed. It means that we've got different networking points that have to be assaulted if anybody wants to take us down. And also, I think somebody in chat a few minutes ago, when I mentioned my idea of doing a history of the gay rights movement, I think somebody mentioned, because you were saying how heavy the subject is, somebody put Bar Steward said, sounds heavy and obsolete. And I can understand that it sounds heavy, but I think this is something very important and something that the Carlyle Institute and Lotus Eaters can provide, which is, if we're serious about changing the culture, influencing the culture in any way, revisionism and having our own resources through which to demonstrate history is really important. Rothbard wrote on this. I think Hopper has written on this. You can't have the boomer truth idea of history be the only dominant idea of history in the mainstream. This is why it's so important that people like Pat Buchanan and others have written about World War II, so that they can change the narrative or influence the narrative. And we don't want 20 years from now, how shall I put this, gay marriage conservatives saying that in the 1970s it was just a bunch of normal, respectable people who just wanted to be able to go out and live their lives like anybody else. No, we need to have a physical resource and our own publications that can show people that's not what happened.
Yes. I mean, I think as well that with a media enterprise, there is a want, at least to some degree, to frame things in a way that are appealing or titillating, or that gets some form of emotional response, because at the end of the day, that's what makes media effective. But as you're saying, when it comes to something that is a historical study, that requires, and dare I say it and use this word, a level of sort of objectivity, as it were, that the framing of a media project might not quite give you. So as you say, you could go and study the roots of, you know, Stonewall or something like that. But I would feel a lot of people would still try to focus on judging it on, say, social and moral values, because that gets clicks to some extent. It gets people outraged. And talking about paedophilia especially gets people outraged and it gets clicks. But really what you must understand it from is from a power situation, and how it fits into an elite that wants to draft up some new political formula.
Well, it's also, as Breathe going to mention there, the fact that we have had, it's not framing very well, but art exhibitions and things. We mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, the exhibition that Alexander Evans and others were doing in London, just called The Exhibition. But something like the Carlyle Institute or having something in that ilk would allow us to network with things like that much easier. In fact, there's a lot of disparate bits. I know a lot of the basket weavers in London tried to do the whole cathedral thing. They did a few nights, and rightly so, they found it quite a burden because it's difficult doing things like that. We obviously do the No More stuff when we can. There'll hopefully be some more announcements on that in the near future. We're still looking at venues and practicalities and stuff still shifting around in terms of timings. Hopefully a few things more are set now.
Yes, I think the weekend is set, the location is set. We just need to pick through venues and find one that works for the scale we're sort of aiming at this time.
Yes, but there are art, distant art exhibitions going on. There are dissident kind of meetings going on. There are slightly more formal events going on. Having somewhere where people can look basically for all of it, they can say, oh, well, if I want to be updated on this space, I can just go and look at, you know, the Carlyle Institute, or talk to people in the Carlyle Institute and figure out what's going on would be quite useful. It gives people a space to belong in. And coming off kind of what you said there as well about narrative and historical narrative and things like that, it is, because you mentioned in your Carl Anstey article here, the Rothbard Library.
I do indeed.
Which has a lot of slightly spicy literature in it.
Well, it is itself just something to sort of behold, because these aren't just like, oh, Rothbard once had a copy of this book, so we've now got a copy of it. These are his copies. Like that copy of The Ruling Class by Mosca, it'll be like, you know, there'll be an outline somewhere around a bit, and you'll be like, oh, this is great, this is very good. And then Mosca will make some conclusion about the fact that, like, this is just the nature of the beast, and he'll be like, sad face.
Yeah.
But, you know, where else could you really do that? I mean, we're a bit late to the punch of making sure that you could read through Carlyle's own personal works. But in that sort of sense, we should at least be able to capture a little bit of that, I think. I mean, yes. None of us nowadays have the money to go and annotate original copies of Mosca, so that's just never going to happen. But just for what it's worth, to realise that, you know, not only is this stuff here, but it's here as a consequence of the fact that there are other people out there that are as dedicated to this stuff as we are. I mean, that was the whole thing for me, going to the Mises Institute, is arriving there, seeing that the building's actually there and it's real. It's not like a joke.
Yeah.
It's not a fugazi. You know, it's not actually just like some sort of sweatshop where they had us like making Mises books and t-shirts for a week as like a joke. It's there, it's real, and it's well intended. Some of the,
it's not Camp Krusty.
Yeah, there are some otherwise problems with libertarianism as an ideology, but what it achieves as an organisation, we can in no way really nitpick.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned about libertarianism, there are problems with the ideology and the conclusions it comes to, but certainly I found it very, very useful for escaping liberal ideas of politics and power. It really just gets you to disassociate yourself with this idea that, oh, it's just the conversation, it's just this situation where two parties have discussions and debates and the people decide. No, it's very good for breaking you out of that mindset.
Yes, it is. Well, you wrote a piece called Coming Through Libertarianism, which I think communicates that.
Yeah, I mean, can we just scroll down? Because I just want to look at the power politics is the only kind of politics there is. The idea of some politics that would not be power politics is empty, self-contradictory. When someone condemns power politics, it is a sign either that he does not know what politics is about, or that he is objecting to someone else's power politics while simultaneously camouflaging his own. As soon as you recognise that, basically everything in libertarianism just gets thrown into the
bin. That's from James Burnham's Struggle for the World, for those who don't know.
Which is a very unintendedly spicy book.
It's a very spicy book, yes. We would recommend it.
Right,
that would definitely be in the Carlyle Library.
Yes, that is another one I can provide to people via PDF if they would like it.
Ah, there we go. Harry, you still there?
I'm still here, don't worry.
He's furiously noting down James Burnham, Struggle for the World.
Okay. I was just saying, I've got a copy of Struggle for the World right here. I actually just need to get round to reading it. But no, I agree with what you're saying, just about the fact that it can be a big morale boost. Mm. I've found that since I've started doing the job that I've done, it's very strange getting recognised now because of the position that I'm in, because one, it's just weird in the first place, but two, it is a morale boost to know that there are other people who care in the same way that you do and care about the same things that you do and see the same things that you do. Because especially if you're online and you're in a little bubble, it can be very easy to squirrel yourself away in a corner where you just think it's just you, and then you end up a complete, getting
doom scroll.
Yes,
doom scroll. You get the doom scroll and you get blackpilled. But through making the sorts of relationships that I've been able to make through you guys and through my job at the Lotus Eaters, it does help you to break through the darkness a little bit. So, like you say, having a physical institution that people can just come to, especially because we don't really have an equivalent of the Mises Institute in the UK, would be good.
Well, yeah, to me, it's like, why shouldn't we use all our effort and energy and expend on something that is physically there, that you can almost, in a ritualistic sense, have a pilgrimage to? We don't necessarily need the big black cube and run around it for 20 hours a day full of acid or whatever like that. That's maybe a bit much. But the practice, I think, of doing that and that becoming something that would almost become a sort of rite of passage is that, you know, to me, I see it in a certain sense. If you're going to go and do libertarianism properly, you've got to go do your pilgrimage to the Mises Institute. If you want to properly study the topics of traditionalism, reactionary sort of thinkers, and historical revisionism, you'd have to do your pilgrimage to the Carlyle Institute and go speak to the wise scholars.
Yes.
But it also just helps us to vet our own people, doesn't it?
Of course.
I think there's a big one, that there is no real system for trying to figure out, because I think there has been, from my point of view, we talked a little bit off air about the fact that I feel like part of the furniture sometimes, because next year I will have basically been in this kind of guise in one form or another online for nearly a decade. But it's a whole thing. There is a, you mentioned kind of the original alt-right 1.0, the Gamergate stuff, the less skeptic community, all that stuff lacked permanence. And really it is, I think, the biggest project, the biggest thing we've seen throughout the reading. We did the stream about Rothbard reviewing Beautiful Losers by Samuel T. Francis.
With Phil Bishop as well, yeah.
With Phil Bishop, which is, we talk about the Rothbard time machine, like him looking at the camera.
Yes.
Him basically going like, well, we've been defeated, but the people of the future will not be.
Well, no, it's very true, though. The saddest thing, really, is that much of us, where we are just now, because of the obscurity of things like elite theory and the fact that the texts are kind of hard to get a hold of, and even when you do have them as a PDF, reading 1,000 pages of PDF is a bit of a struggle sometimes.
That's a way to go blind, yeah.
So we really need what we are doing to be passed on. And that's the reason why we're picking up the pieces from where a lot of the paleo-conservatives and paleo-libertarians left off. Because they didn't all really have sort of students and proteges. And I've sort of joked about this idea before to some people, but when it comes to, say, someone like AA, you know, what happens to his work after he goes? Who follows on and makes sure that the sort of tradition of ideas and sort of thoughts that he was building up actually either get completed or get continued?
Yes.
Is he still thinking about taking on an apprentice?
No, I don't believe so, despite how many times I ask him to do so. And basically say, pick me!
Please, I want to be your apprentice.
Even himself is a resource, so he needs to spread it to somebody, please.
Ben Stewart in chat again raised a good point, saying, I don't know, our old universities have the same kind of permanence and it didn't help them. Well, it did for a good 800 years.
Yes. I mean, that's the thing as well, though. It's not like it's going to be some, you know, bustling NGO that would have hundreds of people working for it. It's really going to be, quite frankly, probably a bit of a tin pot operation, because it has to be by the nature of the beast, really.
Yes.
We do not have silly amounts of money to throw around, nor do we have the legal support that means we can go and make a big noise about or be flash. We would have to be quite quiet. We'd have to probably keep it internal for the most part. And you find it would really be 4 or 5 people working away, probably in a slightly old, dusty, cold church with a big library in it.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, if that dusty, old church full of books becomes something that allows for a study of traditionalist thought to continue another 40 or 50 years ahead of ourselves, then it's the best thing we can ask for. It's all we can ask for.
It's really easy to get blackpilled about this, but one of the reasons that Rothbard was able to succeed the way that he did with the Mises Institute was because Rothbard was when you see interviews with him, when you see him give speeches, for everything that was up against him, and everything that was up against what he wanted to happen with the world, he was ridiculously optimistic, and he never lost that. So I think it's important for us to, despite the fact that we know that the world is against us, we have the entire weight of the institutions and the entire UK government and security apparatus against us. We can't give up hope. We can't just give up because it's hopeless. No, that would be the exact wrong thing to do. Spengler would be absolutely ashamed of us doing so. That's the whole point of the optimism is
optimism is cowardice.
It's him saying, well, yeah, it may be hopeless, but you do your duty anyway.
Well,
and you do it with a smile on your face.
I mean, that's the thing as well, is that we constantly get, I mean, some, you know, we joke about it. You know, I am the black pill dinner lady. You will not get custard. It's, you know, it's sort of a bit of an internal joke. But at the end of the day, a lot of the things we do, again, get framed in a manner that we just think is real and represents what could actually be achieved, or in the circumstance of the stuff we're researching, what actually is the situation on the ground. And that, I think, is really a consequence of the fact that we don't write up streams to make them entertaining or scintillating to any degree. They just are. And I think the way in which something like the Carlyle Institute would operate, it would be very much the same. It isn't there to entertain or necessarily to educate in a sort of simplistic manner. It is there more to make sure that, like, the key lessons from history do not just go lost again.
And again.
And again.
And again and again, yeah.
And there will also probably be copious amounts of Theakston's mild.
Yes, there we go. I found it.
Now you're speaking my language.
That's the one I made of you as the black pill dinner lady. There we go. I'll
black pills, get ye black pills.
We haven't actually used this one before. This is its inaugural usage on a stream without black pills.
No, but that's so us.
Yeah, that is definitely very much us. Is getting out the black pill dinner lady meme on a stream without black pills.
When I listen to the streams, I do feel like, just off camera, I'm in the line just waiting to get my daily dose of black pills. Come on, I need them.
Get your dinner tray out.
The problem is the journey that we take people on in our streams is a journey we go on ourselves a lot of the time, which is that we'll look into an issue and it'll just keep getting worse. Mm. But a lot of the thrust of our work isn't to depress people. It isn't to aggregate doom scrolling. It isn't to be kind of the doom scroll show. Really, the point is to get people to try and disengage from a lot of this stuff. It's to try and make sure that people are looking to themselves, their communities, the people around them, and people they know aren't going to act against their interests. That's the big thing. It's really what we've done is kind of turned to a project of trying to get people to disengage with the current reality and to think more in terms of permanence.
Yes.
And really, that's how I see, you know, the Carlyle Institute is, it wouldn't just be a physical place, it will be like a mental place, a metaphysical place.
Yes, this is also the way that Nomos works. Yes. Nomos is a hotel events room and 70 people who have gathered from across the country, but because we have given it the context and we have built up all the meaning around it, it becomes something so vital. As a slight aside, I noticed Kev G in chat there saying, any historical, cultural, nationalist revivals that you look to as a good example? I mean, not really, other than the Mises Institute, there are really more things that we can learn from. I mean, look at like the London New Right scene and Bowden.
Yes.
That was thriving for a few years, especially during the time that he basically brought all these London folk up to meet and greet with folk from the BNP from the north, because he realised, you know, if we're going to form some kind of conservative thing within Britain, we must take the sort of dissuaded conservatives of the South, who will vote for the Tories again in a few years if we don't show them something, an alternative, and take them to the like working class organisation in the North.
Yeah.
To some extent.
Yeah.
And
Carry on.
And partly because the BNP fell apart and also Bowden sort of tragically died young, that sort of never really happened. And what was left of the New Right in London after Bowden basically all kind of dissolves away into almost nothing by about 2011.
Yes.
And what's left becomes some of the folk that go into Breitbart stuff that never went anywhere anyway, because it all got hijacked by people at bloody Milo Yiannopoulos.
Ah.
Yeah, sorry, do you mind if I interject?
Oh, no, yeah. Go on, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Mentioning the BNP, there is a relevant example, because I put something out earlier on Twitter where there was that bloody William Hague article, and I just kind of copied I did an Auron, and I just like tweeted that out and was like, it's not rocket science, guys, they're just evil and want you dead. So I did a little variation of that. And some guy in the comments underneath, you know, I understand the sentiment. He came out and said, yeah, well, what are the English doing about it? What are the British doing about it? What are you going to do other than just whinge about it? Basically suggesting the classic attitude of, well, we need to organise and we need to go out and protest and populism and et cetera, et cetera. And I can understand the mindset. It's a mindset that it took reading The Populist Illusion for me to get out of in the first place. And even then, still sometimes there are times where I still think, God, if only we could just convince people. But we do need to get people to disengage from that mindset. There are people that I know that are trying to do things and trying to subvert organizations from the inside. And, you know, if they succeed, God bless them. I'll be very surprised. But, you know, all the best to them. I'll be very surprised still. But we need to break people out who could be useful to us of that mindset of we can just vote our ways out of this. The BNP were put down, I think, in the last place by the Equalities Act and the EHRC. And now the TERFs, in combating all of this trans bathroom stuff, are trying to strengthen the Equality Act. So everything that could be against us is against us when it comes to organising into effective political blocks as a party would be able to. The BNP, you know, they say, we're for English people, we only want English people in the party. Equality Act and the EHRC turns around and says, well, you can't do that, that's literally illegal, we're going to sue you. And then they fall apart.
Yep.
This is just how it works. If you want to work in party politics, you have to be some kind of globalist. You have to be some kind of middling managerial globalist Tony Blair type.
Well, slightly the thing that helps us is all the loopholes that are used. I know we've gone on a bit of a think tank arc recently, but they all operate as non-profits.
Yes.
And they all operate very explicitly as on the edge of what a non-profit can be. It's been stretched so far, really, that an institute like the Carlyle Institute, if it was, say, revoked in terms of its charitable status or whatever for political activity, like, I suspect if it became too much of a problem, they would do. But at the moment, it's very hard because there has to be at least a veneer of neutrality. There has to be at least a veneer that the system itself is not completely stacked against people. And there has to be a veneer that fairness takes hold. So the way that things are set out, really, it is... It's what a lot of the establishment people have done themselves to create permanence, is to create these foundations, these NGOs, or these institutes to be their presence out, kind of outside of the remit of the political world, as it were. Because all of these institutes and all of these places, and the Mises Institute does the same, really, that has a charitable status, is a place that is, at least on paper, removed from party politics. And in that way, it gives it a different feel and a different legal fiction, to be honest, a different legal entity otherwise would be.
It was something I think I put in the Vanguard as a messy for the second Nomos event. We engage in politics in order to live. We do not live in order to engage in politics.
Yes.
We do not fall for the modern faith that is just constant secular democratic political squabbling, because it is a way to utterly waste your life. And anyone that actually wants to do that as a career is someone you should be highly suspicious of.
Sometimes you need to switch off. Sometimes people need to switch off and just have fun. It's very easy when you're constantly engaging with this stuff to just forget that there is life out there. You can go outside, you can still breathe fresh air, you can still interact with your friends. It's not the end.
Yes. Thank you for the $20, though. DRT is king, $20, saying, one problem with the early internet activists were how disparate they were. Thus, they were easily fragmented, and I fear me and my fellow Americans can't unite in the one place due to the scale of America. Well, now we keep pointing at the Mises Institute, but it is possible. And there is also an event that takes place once a year with the Shieldings people.
I was also going to suggest that I believe one of the things that was worked out at the recent Shieldings Nashville event in the US was that the people from the Old Glory Club, like our good friends like Charlemagne and Radlib and Turnip and Clossington and all the other folk.
You forgot Pete Q.
And Pete Q. there's so many of them. I should say an extra special thanks to Pete Q, to be honest, because he is just an immaculately good person. But I think they are essentially starting something akin to fraternities, I believe is the phrase that they're using for it.
Okay.
And I would actually, if anything, I would send you to Yiz there in the comments, who I'm sure would be more than happy to sort of explain to you some of the more inner workings of that kind of stuff.
I'd ask you a couple of questions then, Harry, since we've got you here.
Of course, shoot.
Well, what do you think really would be kind of your end state for something like the Carlyle Institute then? What do you think is the most kind of pressing aspect of it for you in terms of setting up like a physical institute? Like, where do you see, lots of people have different passions and different areas, but what most excites you about the prospect of something like a Carlyle Institute?
I think, once again, for me, like I mentioned earlier, it would just be the opportunity to have constant resources at our disposal, like the library, like just an area to meet up at and discuss ideas and have interesting discussions with one another. And then also to have publications and papers and research that we've done to demonstrate to people the sort of worldview that we hold and that we think should be ascendant in the world. Then also, if we have the ability to vet people, we could, there was discussion before the stream of potentially training people up to essentially become our minions to go out into the world and get stuff done that we want them to.
Well, yeah, it's something I've sort of always come back to with, as you said earlier on, everything is weighed up against us. You know, we could have an organization of 100 people we could trust with our lives, and we could be armed to the teeth with all the money in the world, but at the end of the day, the police would come and squash us because we just do not have, in a certain sense, the sort of ruling political legitimacy that our elites have. You know, it's a sort of intangible thing, but it allows them to get away with literal murder.
Yeah.
So we can't go out there being loud, brash activists. You have to be what I've always referred to as a respectable representative of the ideas and values you care for. Go out there, dress sharp, speak to people well, listen, and also maybe, like, perchance have the odd tobacco product that makes you look like you're from 50 years in the past.
Interesting question there from Coney Current Year. Thank you for the $5. Oh, sorry, £5, of course. My terrible now. Our good old English pounds. Where do you think the Carlyle Institute should be based? I think it should be based on all issues. No. I had a look at the rail map of the UK, judging by size, quality, and accessibility. York looked like a great choice. Honestly, a lot of the, I know it's pie in the sky, we don't really have the resources, we don't really have any, you know, we could do with setting it up. Setting up a non-profit can be a bit tricky sometimes as well, you have to do it properly. But anywhere really on the West Coast, mainline is a good bet.
Yes.
Because London, unfortunately, is still the hub of Britain. But if you can be somewhere that is, say, only 2.5 hours by high-speed train from London, you're going to get people.
I think if we were to come up with 5 or 6 characteristics that would define the space, we would end up with a handful of areas that would just be those by consequence. Because the only thing I would worry about York is that you're probably in relative proximity to a university to an extent that they could do like some weird activist protest crap.
I think the big problem with York is that if they are going to go ahead with these stupid plans that they've put in recently to become the country's first, the North's first anti-racist city, you're going to have lots of activist busybodies poking around everywhere and trying to make sure everything fits into these new anti-racist guidelines and regulations, which of course are just going to be completely malleable depending on whoever it is administering them. So York, as beautiful as it is, as much as I love York, probably wouldn't be a viable place for me.
I have a suggestion, but it's a bit too close to where we...
Yeah, this the thing is that ultimately...
If this
is to work to some extent and probably going to have people like ourselves at the helm of it, it's probably going to be pretty close to where we are.
Yes.
But that's just by nature of the fact that it's quite cheap around here.
Yes.
There's actually some really nice old buildings that are going disused, are basically up for let for buttons. And if they're not going to get turned into another like local snooker hall, the Carlyle Institute is about the only good purpose for them.
There is a lot of... I think the North...
Or both.
Carlyle Institute includes a snooker hall.
Yes.
Of course it should. How did they not work this out?
There should also be like a proper cigar room, but that's kind of by the
by. Over the table.
No smoke. don't smoke on the table. Sorry, we were watching some of The Sweeney the other day. We've been re-watching The Sweeney. So we've got a lot of... old 70s gangsterisms.
I was going to say something, but I'll not, so we can leave it as a really good end gag one day.
Yeah, yeah, we probably will do, because we do slight end gags still. But no, I think that's a good answer. And you're right, it is. The thing that appeals to me is the permanence aspect, because people have mentioned in chat, and you've mentioned, and I've mentioned, the history of the online activism sphere. And I feel really that a lot of it has been people learning and forgetting the same lessons over and over again to a very, very high degree. And the big problem is they have people coming in and out. There's no permanency. There's no, you know, your speech that's behind the paywall on the Substack, which was your speech at the WITAN, is about the idea that do you remember the alternative influencer network, Harry? The whole thing, the big like point cloud, the alt-right pipeline, basically.
I think I'm probably tangentially aware of this. People need to be aware of me.
You could probably just get the article up, because it will show you the image from it at least.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm basically a baby in the scene, to be perfectly honest. Before I joined Lotus Eaters, I was nobody, and I've been learning as I go on the job. And I like to think I've learned very quickly a lot of these lessons, but I'm still out of the loop with some things.
Yeah, but the report was from By Data and Society. It was by, was it Rebecca Lewis or something?
Something like that, yeah.
But anyway, I think it's further, there you go, page 11.
Yeah.
They've got this big image up, and it's like all these different people, like, you know, there's a good friend, Millennial Woes, and then that weirdo guy, Richard Spencer, who works for CNN. You know, oh God, Michael Knowles is on there, another Daily Wire crowd. But
Mr. Medica.
In principle.
Wow. Look how tiny Nick was.
Yeah.
Nick's principle, the same size dot as V.
The people that
different times.
The people that sort of, or the woman that put this article together, without actually calling this a propaganda network, was calling it an influence network. And really the crux at the end of my speech at WITAN, to some extent, was, well, you know, I laid down all this stuff about how propaganda works, about organised minorities, about sort of technical elements of propaganda. So why, when they accuse us of being a propaganda network, do we not then take the opportunity to form one? It was literally just me pointing at this image saying, this isn't real, but it should be.
There, it's on screen now. Yeah, there's diamond and silk. If you guys want to check this out, it's a real time capsule. But they were going, look, all these people are coordinating with each other.
Bunty King.
Being behind the scenes in those days, that was not happening at all. There was no pipeline. There was no communication. There was the occasional, the closest thing was like a Skype group with like me, Sargon, and V, and God, who else was in there? I think Oozlu was in there.
I wish it was disorganized.
I know, exactly. You're telling me, sir.
Why is Destiny in there?
Because he'll go on, he used to be a jobber who would go on anyone's show.
Well, this is all they framed this around a lot of the internet, blood sports. That's why Andy Worski's like the biggest thing on this, because they used him as a one to connect everybody, which is actually a low-key way to hint at the fact that people like Andy Worski basically exist to say nothing and just create negative associations between people. But that's a story for a different day.
I mean, this is the first time I've ever seen this, and it's quite remarkable. It's either, to me, they really were just completely unaware of how disparate every single person was, or they were just projecting their own level of organisation onto us lot.
Well, they were trying to make us look scarier.
Yes, no, I think actually you're right on the second part there.
Yeah.
They work together, they work with universities, they work with big media companies, and they assumed that we did. Now, the situation, I think, is a lot different nowadays, because I could draw this network up and connect it to all the Tory party stuff.
Yes.
Or all some of the big media sort of figures, especially with the US stuff. There seems to be a level of sort of money from a certain ethnicity that is dripping through quite a lot of all of that.
Yeah, it's so old. Lauren Chen is still roaming millennial.
What
a deep cut.
Oh my God.
What a...
Computing forever all the way at the bottom with bloody mundane Matt. It's Jarbo!
Even in this, Jarbo gets... Look at him. He's like the lightest coloured periphery dot. That's so funny.
See, this always happens when we have someone on stream. It just devolves into like old internet fag.
I'm sorry, when all of this was going on, I was enjoying myself, completely unaware of anything. I was playing video games with my buddies. This is just, it was so strange to me, but I'm aware of a lot of these people now. I was so shocked, because I mainly learnt about Mundane Matt through bloody EFAP. of all things, when they made fun of him for his stupid, oh, I was out moving boulders with my son comment. So I was shocked when I found out he used to be associated with Carl.
Oh, yeah, I did. I don't know. If you guys want to laugh, look up the Jabba the Hutt stuff, because some of that music actually low-key slaps. Some of it's so good.
Yeah,
if you guys want to treat yourselves after stream, look up Jabba the Hutt steam cleaner.
Yeah,
you'll be
Kraut the Nipple Man is on there too. This is the real far right, guys. That's fucking great.
Well, the whole point of your essay was that this doesn't exist, but it should.
Yes,
and that would be the whole point of something like a Carlisle Institute, would be to network people together. It was like a basic thing. That's what the basket weaving stuff was about. Yep. That's what Nomos is about. That's what Stieldings and the Witan try to be about. It's about manifesting this in the real world. But there needs to be a permanent space of manifestation.
He loves his boulders and hates Adblock. Right, that's enough of that.
Because I remember it was on Jay Burden's show. It turned into, hey, you remember this? I turned into Peter Kay.
Do you remember the skeptics?
Remember
mate?
King of Paul?
No.
Some of you, press P in chat if you remember King of Paul. But no, okay, we really must get back on topic now, because otherwise I'm just going to go off on a big internet rabbit hole. We've talked about basically all of these, really. Preservation of culture and written works, Bannacher producer for some material, a rallying point.
I think maybe I could say that the fourth and the sixth one there sort of go hand in hand as well, because one of the problems I think people have, I mean, I noticed this as well, like the big one was the NRX. Everyone all of a sudden just started throwing NRX around as a label. Now, fair enough, I'd read some of Moldbug's stuff, and because I was coming, you know, through libertarianism, out of Hopper and into some of the traditionalist stuff, I was seeing some of the similar kind of things for different reasons. But in that sense, I then was labelled by other people's NRX, and nowadays it's dissident right. And it's like, the dissident right's doing this, the dissident right's doing that. Well, it's not really, because it's not a declared set of people. However, if someone who wasn't associated with the Carlisle Institute was running around saying the Carlisle Institute's doing this or that, you would instantly know straight away, well, you're not part of that. You're lying.
Yes.
Whereas when it's sort of amorphous and entry and exit into the movement is essentially free-flowing, there is no way to even police what you call yourself.
Yes, there is. It's the whole thing of the oh God, I'm going to really age myself here. One of the first articles I wrote on the Substack, and that I recently turned into a video that people actually seem to quite enjoy. I was quite surprised how much traction those have got, but was called Permissible Activism, in which I talk about the fact that I have been on the internet so long that I was actually around on 4chan during the whole Chanology, Church of Scientology protest thing, which really birthed online activism, in quotes, as a supposed force. And a lot of the stuff that's said about online activism is a complete lie. And I know, because unfortunately online activism is partially my fault and other people around me's fault. So I'm trying to make up for myself.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to take you out the back and shoot you once I've done this.
Yeah,
it's all your fault.
It's all my fault. I'm not going to, I've been over some of the stuff I've been involved in with people. Like, wait a minute, it is all your fault. But a lot of things we have tried online, and there's a lot of mistakes I've made, a lot of lessons I've learned firsthand. But one of them really is that there is a need for permanence. There's a need to get offline. There is a need to unify, to have a unified message, to have a proper demarcation of who is part of it and who is not. I'm getting a little bit long in the tooth here.
Sorry, Anthony Keane just put in the chat, poor Harry was probably at school. Unironically, yes.
So wait, what
unironically, I was still in my first year of college this time 10 years ago.
Oh, no, wait, so you must be older than me then.
Oh, okay. Well, it's my birthday at the end of the month, actually. So if anybody wants to wish me a happy birthday, please go ahead. I'll be 27 at the end of the month.
Oh,
so.
you old cunt. I'm only 23. Get it up.
Oh, fuck off. I got called a little fucking fetus by a guard the other day, so I'll take his opinion over yours.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, I can sit and talk to Chris Gard about like the Australian car scene in the 90s, like I was there, so I got a pass. I also have like a weird energy I carry where people think I'm like some sort of doctoral like student.
People
or something
do think
like that.
You're
my 30s is
you
quite
are,
funny.
Yes.
Well, Gard and I can chat about obscure music and probably jam together when he's here later on in the year.
Connie Current Year sent a message, but unfortunately it's been redacted. But thank you for the addition.
Maybe the message was message redacted.
Yeah. DRT King again, thank you for $2. Northern Ireland would be cheap and far from London. Unfortunately, it's quite far from us.
See, I forgot to say earlier on today, happy 12th, get up, you tags. I tell you what, as a complete aside, when I was in the pub the other day, they were talking about what their plans were for the 12th. I thought that was hilarious. Yeah, that's the sort of conversation I've not heard in a very long time.
A lot of people will be lost, and I'm glad they are, because we're not going to clarify that. But and as we can kind of come towards a natural end, we only tend to do an hour on a Wednesday. Is there anything you want to put forward, any thoughts that you've had? Just because we've talked quite a lot here, Harry, kind of about the idea of physical organization that you think has been missed, because I know it's not something that's discussed much in kind of the wider sphere even.
No.
I think we've covered quite a bit that's interesting and relevant here, so I don't know if there's much more to add that we haven't already covered other than, we need something to preserve us for the future, because as far as the work goes that we're doing, unless there is some kind of miracle where people that I know are able to sneak into these organizations from behind and suddenly turn the Tory party into the uber-based right-wing England first party that people want it to be, unless a miracle happens like that, I don't see how the effective change that we want that reverses everything terrible that's been done to this country is going to happen in our lifetime. So we need to preserve it, and we need to preserve, like you say, the lessons that we have learnt. And so I think the Carlyle Institute and other things like it, I think, like I say, I'm part of Lotus Eaters. I really love the work that we do at Lotus Eaters, and I think we do important stuff, but the Carlyle Institute seems like it could be a fantastic addition to the kind of organisation that we can actually start to do in the UK that won't ruffle feathers to get us all put in prison or sued into bankruptcy.
Yes, I mean, this is the thing, is that you can go out there and do something radical and dangerous and make yourself a martyr, and it might be effective, but we do not have neither the quantity nor the quality of people required to make something like that work for any matter of time more than 5 minutes. So, I mean, again, I'll just frame it in the way that I always do. I see the Carlyle Institute as the sort of ideal that we all should be aiming ourselves towards for the next 10, 15 years. If even only just having that idea all keeps us together aiming at something.
Yes.
It has then served a purpose in that alone.
I'm always reminded of, and I bring it up a lot because it's very relevant and it always sticks to my mind, of Panama Hat's speech from the first Witan, sorry, the first Shieldings event. It wasn't the Witan then. Talking about the Moors in Spain and about the idea that it took, you know, nearly 800 years to get rid of them, or at least kind of from the initial past, 700 to 800 years. But it was something that happened, and it was a multi-generational project. And there's the idea of kind of steeling yourself against it and not expecting or not hoping for even progress in your lifetime, but building towards something that may eventually bear fruit. You know, it's plant trees you'll never see the shade of and things like that.
But yes,
there's so little of that, and it's one of the biggest aspects of modernity is that is beaten out of us quite ruthlessly. And as traditionalists and as people who look back to an earlier time but also look forward and don't just wallow in the past, it's vital really that we have so much wider time horizons. And I'm glad there's at least a few people who are coming out and voicing that and expressing that they want that even. Thank you for the $5, Melon. There's a couple more donations here. Thanks for explaining Tory boys. It helped me see their equivalent in my country. I believe that's Australia.
Yes.
And yeah, there was a few people who sent me stuff being like, oh yeah, this is the equivalent in Denmark, or this is the equivalent in Holland. Oh, we have that here. It's a very common kind of political tactic. And honestly, having somewhere to point and go, you know, well, you know, I'm Evelyn from the Carlisle Institute. Even just that has a weight to it. And that's kind of how they get it past people. It works. We've seen it works.
Yeah.
Kony Current Use, she's still workshopping locations. But well, I'm not sure about Stafford. I've only ever been there once. But,
well, no, I think
it's convenient for me.
I think that is the correct point.
Can I put forward a suggestion?
After I say there's one last line, which is you must build the boats that your children will send the foreigners home on.
You've been holding on to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your suggestion then?
So my suggestion is the same suggestion I have for everywhere, for anything, which is Nantwich, which is where I'm from. It's a gorgeous little Tudor town. There's some buildings there that have been there for hundreds of years. Beautiful. It's like 99% English, and I just love the place. So anything that I can get to just stick in my home, because I just want to go back there so much.
I mean, you have to go back.
Swindon is not like that. And there's lots of pretty buildings. It's quite cheap, especially for the sort of area that you're in. You can walk 5 minutes in any direction and you're in the countryside. And there is a bloke there who operates every weekend when it's sunny by the church who does the best ice cream you've ever had. So these are just some of the ideas that I'm putting forward for why Nantwich should be the place.
I appreciate that. I do think of the Carlisle Institute as to come to fruition. It must exist in a building that is older than America.
Yes, definitely.
There are plenty of those, some that survived the fire during the Tudor era.
Because I've lived in buildings that were built when they didn't know about America, so...
Yeah, same. Back when it used to just be Infinite Sea.
I don't know. Quickly, I will say as well that a few people pointed out in the chat, but Harry does also have an encyclopedic knowledge of specifically British metal.
I'm supposed you'll probably want to do some kind of music stream possibly at some point.
Probably, actually.
I'd be well up for that. I wouldn't say encyclopedic, but I do know a fair amount because... I used to work for a community station in Cheshire, and I spent a lot of time just making sure that I found at least one new band almost every day to listen to and try and get familiar with their catalogue. So I know a decent amount about music.
I'll have to go find some crackhead from the local pub so I can do a Gabber stream with him.
Talking about your UK dancing music.
Scrum, what are you doing? Why haven't you taught her?
Put a donk on it.
To be fair, Evelyn actually has an extremely wide taste in music.
This is very true.
She does like a lot of different things. So no.
My youth was spent memorizing basically every System of a Down track. So.
Okay, that's all right. I respect that because I did the exact same thing.
There we go.
And
I need to see them before they all split up again, and I need to see Iron Maiden before one of them dies.
You know, I don't want to pitch something on air because it'll never happen, but I will say that I've been meaning to do something about how new metal was actually the last truly reactionary musical movement.
I'd be very interested in hearing your argument for that.
I have some great arguments about
this. That is something we've actually talked about. I couldn't sit here and talk about
it. Because of how overwhelmingly white it was.
This is one part of it. There is also some others. I mean, just in general, I think a large part of it would just come down to System of a Down and a lot of the things they
represent. Also like Slipknot's era.
Slipknot like, casually throwing out like references to Gnosticism and
not dying,
Geometria and all
not
sorts
dying
of stuff.
For America's wars, and there's a lot.
Yeah,
of,
I mean that all works. I mean, I take the opinion that heavy metal is just inherently right wing. No matter what you want to do with it, heavy metal, even if you have the most gay lyrics possible, will still have that masculine energy.
It depends, but yes.
What, Ram Ranch metals? Well, that would have to be right wing, of course.
How dare you? The Ram Ranch is the peak of reactionaries. Ram Ranch is Bapism.
I'm sorry, we almost forgot.
Yeah.
It's coming towards the end of our stream. Would you like to join us in this, Harry? As with all streams, we love the Nation of Israel.
We are only still on YouTube because we reaffirm our commitment to the Nation of Israel.
We think it is the most legitimate state, and we wish
Israel number one.
Yeah, we wish today and forever that there will be democracy in Israel.
You know, I agree with the Walter Block argument for Israel. I still can't believe you wrote that article.
Very, very funny. But I think we've kind of come to a logical conclusion here of our discussion. You can find Harry over at Harry Lotus Eater on Twitter, or you can just go on his Lotus Eater page. Again, that is down below. I will once again shill the fact that we have the Antipolitics Substack, where a lot of the material we've referenced comes from. And again, if you guys are watching this in the VOD and you do want to support us, we do. The primary way is the Ko-fi in terms of not getting a cut taken. But there's all that. I've seen people leaving super thanks and comments and things like that.
Yeah, there has been a few generous people this stream as well.
Thank you very much. I will double check that I haven't missed any donations from the Ko-fi. I don't think I have. I think a lot of people honestly kind of blew. We got a lot of donations at the beginning of the month, so again, thank you to everyone who donated, because there was quite a few of them.
We should have a normal stream next Monday, and then next Wednesday I think you might be busy, so we might give people a bit of a break next week with only one stream so that people can catch up.
I'll actually be doing kind of a new intro video for the channel, and also explaining to people, I'm setting up some playlists. I've had a lot of people ask me of how to navigate our actually quite sizable back catalogue now, because we've been doing this for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I'll be doing kind of a bit of a navigating our channel video on Wednesday for people. And there'll also be a Substack piece coming out, another part of the Mantras coming out on Thursday. They'll be kind of coming out for this field of the future. I will hopefully have something recorded for next Tuesday from the Substack, but I can't really promise anything. It might just be a shorter one. Because there are a few shorter pieces I've done in there semi-recently. But yeah, we've still got content coming. We try and keep a pipeline going. People kind of stuck with it through this project. All we have left to say is thank you for coming, Harry. Thank you for being on the stream and discussing this.
Thank you for having me on again.
Rather important.
Thank you for everyone for tuning in.
Yes, and I think that's all that's left to say.
Have a good weekend. Get to the fucking pub.
Yes, well, it's only Wednesday. Everyone, it's only Wednesday.
And?
Well, I'll say goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me, I suppose.
And goodbye from me.
Yes, have a good evening, all and sundry.
All right.